Life's learning curve left me speechless. Conclusion.
Today's story is not my story. It's one retold to me by a friend I met out west. This actually happened to him. I retell this as if it happened to me. Characters have been combined and events have been condensed. These are his memories. He was the teller of his own story. This episode has imaginative recreations. To protect the privacy of others, names have been changed and characters conflated. Well, hi again, everybody. This is part two, the final part of episode titled Left Me Speechless. I'm Paul Hart, your host of Life's Learning Curve. We're a podcast about our lifelong quest to find that best person that we can possibly be so we can become better people, not only for ourselves, but for others. People responded in numbers to part one. So I want to read a couple for you that came in through emails. A gentleman named Mohan J. wrote, "When I was 18 and fresh out of high school, I was sitting at an interview on a super hot day in late August. My interviewer was an older woman, and let's just say she was a heavy sweater. She had a small fan on her desk that oscillated. It rotated back and forth. Every time that fan's breeze hit her, she would just stop the interview, which was rather intense, and just utter, 'Oh.'" Ben Silvis writes,
email number two.
"I went into an office for an interview with a man who was already sleeping when I entered the office. I was sent in by myself. After 5 minutes of trying to wake him, I just got up and left. For a while, I thought, you know, he might be asleep, he might be comatose, he might be dead. I didn't know. So on the way out, I told his secretary that I was concerned about him because he really just wasn't waking up. He almost looked like he wasn't breathing. I didn't go back. I didn't take that job. Nobody ever phoned me. That was it. She had no response to what I had told her, so I ran out of there." But what has left you speechless in life without words? Well, we're going to talk about this conclusion today. And there's going to be that and one other quick story. We'll be right back.
Life's Learning Curve. I'm Paul Hart. Episode, Left Me Speechless. Conclusion, stand by.
Words are just words. But the word's intent can last a lifetime depending how they're used towards somebody. In today's episode, our conclusion, innocent people needed help and they came to me for help. I was able to help these people. The result of my efforts cast a shadow over my career to the end of my career. It was haunting and ooh, how it spread in a negative manner. It closed doors, it eliminated career options, and it kept many professionals that I really desired to work with at a safe distance from me. After all, I was the victim. Or was I the perpetrator? Only I knew. Apparently, I am still the only one who knows. It was the late 1990s. Our small school had been a revolving door for an endless amount of professionals, principals, and administrators. Coming and going. There were about 7 different principals in about 7 years time. The last guy, Ben, had been okay. He was smart and he was bright and worked hard and he tried hard and had better control and visibility in the building. Ben was a guy I could talk to comfortably. However, Ben had unpredictable moods with other people sometimes. However, politics from the upper administration outside the school had suggested that Ben perhaps should move on. Apparently, he had expressed his opinion when it wasn't asked for somewhere outside the school. So in came another new administrator. When I called our school secretary late that summer, her name was Mrs. Corelli, I asked her one question. Does this new guy, does he have a sense of humor? And her answer, Mrs. Corelli said,
Yes. Well, yes, I guess, Paul. I can tell you that when Mr. Randall, his name is Mr. Robert Randall, kind of considers himself to be the smartest person in the room. And
really?
Every morning when he comes in and to the office, he always tells me that. Who's the smartest person in the room? He asks me. And I always tell him, well, you are Mr. Randall. He was kind of charming when he first started back a few weeks. And after we made friends, he kind of just ignores me now.
Really?
So I don't know. I don't really know the man yet.
So in education, you do not see that type of overt, obvious behavior too often. People are a little bit more subtle. Okay, so his name, as I said, or as Mrs. Corelli said, was Mr. Robert Randall, or Robert, or Bob. It's a made-up name for the podcast. So the only real challenge we all had with him was trying to understand his pretty thick Southern accent at the time. Having had so many principals come and go, our little school pretty much ran itself. The custodians and the staff all being the true face of that school building for so many years as the administrators came and went. But as the school year went on that year, I became aware that some of the staff members had changed. It was very subtle, and nobody was talking about the change. What I noticed was the people who were normally friendly and happy and easy to work with became more distant and kind of solemn. The building's relaxed humor had taken this leave of absence, and they didn't eat lunch in a staff room like we all used to eat together and share stories and talk about our families and, you know, just kind of socialize. But teachers were hiding in their classrooms eating their lunch. Now, that school year ended with a phone call from a senior teacher that I greatly respected, Mrs. Mary DeFolio. And she was, again, another made-up name. She was an excellent, innovative teacher. She was just top-notch, bright. Her students adored her for all the right reasons. She was the teacher you would want your child to have. So, as I said, she was bright, she was a helper within the school, a very calm problem solver, and always supportive to anyone and all. She was a major reason that that little school had survived all the changes in administrative personnel for all those years. Mary said to me,
"Hi, Paul, this is Mary DeFolio."
Mary, hi, yeah.
Yeah, hi. Hey, I have an unusual question to ask you, and did anything unusual happen to you this school year?
Unusual? Well, how do you mean?
With our principal.
She went on to tell me a story about being confronted in her classroom after school when she was alone by the new principal, Bob Randall. Not only had she been angrily poked by his pointer finger, but he yelled loudly at her, and he told her how outraged he was with her. He poked and he pushed her until she finally hit the wall, pushed her backwards. Mary was confused, but had the composure at the time to ask him why he was so angry and what was really going on. And Bob exclaimed,
I'm too mad at you to even discuss this.
He went on to exit her room, slamming the door as an exclamation point. This was the second time he had done that to her. I was the only other male in this building. Soon other teachers came to find me, and they shared similar stories of threats and aggression by Robert Randall. They were somewhat afraid and worried about him returning because he had been physically pushing them. He had been verbally abusing them and using the pointer finger, and then not clarifying why he was so mad at them. They didn't feel safe in Robert Randall's work environment. These educators had one thing in common. These were the women that were the best of the best educators at that little building. They were strong in leadership. They had many years of experience. They were highly effective. The ones that made great things happen, not only with the children, but working after hours with the community at the school. undeniably the hardest workers as well. You know, people that I aspired to be, to look up to. I could be better if I watched them. So I wanted to help. They had asked me for my take on what was going down and for any assistance. So I wondered what to do. Pondered, I guess, is the word. So I called our union president. His name was Jerry Middleton, made up name for the podcast.
Jerry Middleton.
And he listened very carefully, took some notes, but ultimately didn't do anything at first. I studied my options. I was glad that my experiences with Robert Randall, with Bob, had been cordial the entire school year. Until I received a note from Bob Randall asking to see me after school one late day in May toward the end of the school year. Come on in, Paul. Sit down. What's going on, Bob? I have no words. What's going on? What's up? I have so many letters of complaint about you, and it's too much. Whoa, calm down, Bob. It can't be that bad. What's the problem? What's in the letters? There's too much to say. There's all kinds of things in these letters. There were so many coming in all year, I had to make a special folder for you, just for you, in my lower right-hand desk drawer. Like what, Bob? Are these letters from parents or students or people in the community? What are they? All of it? You are lucky to still be working after what you've done. What? What have I done, Bob? I'm too mad to even talk about it. I can't. I just can't. I can't. That's when I realized the common thread with my fellow teachers in the building. Robert Randall, Bob, had yelled, intimidated, and pushed them around. For me, I guess there were letters. Bad letters. So I said to Bob, how many letters are there, Bob? I don't know. There's 27, 30, something like that. So I have to tell you something before I continue. I had been awarded several accreditations by the State Board of Education at that time. I had written technology grants that applied to our little school, brought in money, as well as written articles for a national publication about technology integration in the classroom that year. So I had a very positive feeling about entering that first school year with Bob Randall. Things had been going fairly well. These were positive things that had helped the school year progress in a positive way for me. So I had been blessed to have had those positives in my life that year. My response to Bob Randall was probably not what he expected, but it was really the way I felt. So I said to Bob, I've had a good run up until now. This type of thing happens to a lot of us, almost all of us at some times in our careers. I guess it's finally my time to get some grief about something. But as far as I can tell, everything seems pretty good. Bob Randall just stared at me, and his face turned beet red. Get out of here! I can't even look at you! I'm so angry! I did not leave, but rather I told Bob, Bob, I need to know what these complaints are. What are they about? I need to correct them if I've done something that's bothered or hurt somebody. I need to change. You know, I need to know what's not right. But I was interrupted. Get out! Yelled Bob. I cannot tell you how personally I took this. I was even too rattled to let the other women in the building, whom had gone through a similar confrontation with the principal, I couldn't even tell them. However, their dressing down had been verbal. And in their case, he pushed and he poked at them, backing them up to intimidate them into the wall. One was pushed up against a closet. But not so with me. I had no idea why I felt so ashamed. I really didn't, but I did. He was very good at what he did. Bob had done a great job at deflating me. I completed that school year silent and kind of humorless. I think I had just 1 week left to go, feeling full of shame. Sure, I knew that this had happened to some of my peers as well, but when Robert Randall screamed at me, I really felt at fault. He was really good at dressing you down. I tried to further clarify things with Bob, but he would just look at me and get angry and turn beet red in the face first, which was, you know, like a trigger sign that something was going to happen. And he'd throw his hands up in the air in a stop position.
Get out.
Bob flatly refused to talk with me any further. And the school year ended. I entered summer hiatus, a time when you retool and you regroup and you get your summer brain back for a few weeks in a clouded brain funk. I couldn't shake it. All I could think about was that meeting with Bob. What did I do? What did I actually do? It was in my head. I reviewed my school year in my head over and over. Every day of it that I could remember. I became hypercritical of anything that I recalled that might not have been positive. As a distraction, I tried, you know, working out more, going to the local track that summer, but I never quite got that routine reestablished for the summer, which is really good for me. It was good to always go running every day. Kept thinking about it. It was tough. So instead, I took to eating a bit too much that summer instead of running. You can probably guess what happened there. I kept calling my union president, Jerry Middleton, until finally he responded and called me back in late June. Jerry said,
"Hey, Paul, it's Jerry. Hey, I called Bob Randall today.
Thanks.
Yeah, you're right. He's really mad at you.
Okay.
Wow. I asked him what was going on, and he finally told me that he had letters of complaints about you. Yeah, Jerry. Yeah, that's what he told me. Well, what did you do?
Jerry, I have no idea what I did. I asked Bob the same thing. You know, that day he took me into his office. He said that he was too mad to even look at me or tell me what was in the letters.
Paul, I want you to call Bob Rand at school after you and I hang up and set a meeting up for tomorrow. I'll come in with you.
Okay.
You should always have someone else impartial there as kind of a witness, just somebody who can observe.
Uh-huh.
I'll just keep quiet. Let them know who I am. I'll be fair about that. But let's see what we can do. So, plan on this, Paul. Tomorrow we'll go in to see Bob Rand in his office. But I have something to tell you. I need you to know this. If anyone ever accuses you of something in letter form,
okay,
they have to show you their evidence of a complaint. It's in our contract language.
Oh, really?
I thanked Jerry and we hung up. Inspired, but I was a whole lot of uneasy. Like I wanted this to continue, because it didn't, but it had to be fixed. I was fearful. I was worried. What would happen? After all, I might be coming face to face with those multiple letters of complaints about me. Maybe they were real. I went to bed early that night because tomorrow I needed it to come as fast as possible. My life, my insides, my mental health were a mess. No one had the right to make an accusation like this and vaguely just walk away, but that's what Principal Robert Randall had done. At 9 a.m. the following morning, Union President Jerry Middleton arrived just a couple of minutes late, so with respect, I entered Principal Robert Randall's office at the agreed-upon time of 9 a.m. Bob Randall's face was already turning bright red in anger. I sat down in one of the two chairs directly across from Mr. Robert Randall's desk.
Sit down. Paul, I'm a busy man. What kind of nonsense is this? I got a call from a guy yesterday, and I'm not happy about that. So this guy, Jerry, knows about this, our meeting? Who else did you gossip to?
With that, Jerry opened the door of Principal Robert Randall's office and walked in. He had heard Bob speaking angrily to me. Bob, this is Jerry Middleton from our teachers union. He's here to be my representative. Now, seeing that I had someone with me, Principal Robert Randall's beet red face softened, and his once tense voice had a more high-pitched and a calmer tone. Bob said,
"Ah, hello, Jerry. I'm Robert Randall, administrator here."
Jerry said,
"Hello, Bob. Don't mind. I don't mind me at all. I'm just an observer."
And I noticed right away that Bob now appeared a bit more calm and a bit more relaxed. Not at all like the man who was so angry just a minute prior. I said, "Bob, the letters of complaint that you have concerning me, I'll need to see them."
"Well, I suppose that won't happen. Goodbye to both of you, because I'm a busy man. I got stuff I need to do."
Before I could respond, Jerry had the teacher's contract out, and it was in Bob's face, and he was showing him the quote that said,
"Look right here, Bob.
All evidence must be shown to a teacher if a complaint is garnered. If not, the complaint is not acceptable and not enforceable, and is regarded as hearsay, not truth, and cannot be used against the educator." Principal Bob Rand actually responded with,
Duh. Not
trying to be funny, that's what he said. At that moment, I had a moment of clarity. For the first time in weeks, my reality returned. It had been a long time. I needed to see the letters. I needed to read them. I wanted to know what I may have done. I needed that.
"So where are the letters, Bob?"
"I don't know where they're at."
"I do. You told me that they're in a file in your lower right-hand desk drawer. You said there were 27 or 30 of them."
"I don't know where they are. I don't know. I don't know."
"Well, can you look?"
"No, I can't look. I told you I'm busy. You gotta leave. You and your friend Jerry leave."
As we walked out of the building, Jerry Middleton mildly grinned at me and said,
"Paul, he doesn't have any letters. It's a bluff. You can tell. But I can tell you this. This isn't over yet. He's up to something."
"Like what?"
"But why, Jerry? Why is he doing this?"
Jerry just shrugged, and he wished me a happy summer. I thanked him before he got into his dark green sedan and drove off. I didn't enjoy that summer hiatus at all. That summer, I went missing from my family, from my life. I was in my head all summer, thinking through things. This was my necessary time off to recoup, refresh, and plan. Well, we continued pushing the teachers' union for assistance, and they did provide something. So after sharing my incident with the other women who had really not compared notes up until then, when we asked for more help from our union, our teachers' union made us meet twice weekly that summer in a classroom setting with a Uniserve director throughout the summer so we could learn how to accommodate an ineffective, aggressive principal. It wasn't about Bob Randall having to correct his behaviors. It was about us learning to deal with them. He was going to be left as is. The meetings were offensive to us all, and the three women and a fourth woman began to not attend anymore. And I didn't blame them. I wanted it all to disappear too. I wanted a normal life again. I wanted normalcy. However, This was reality, and I had to face it. Early August, late summer, just before school started, I got a phone call from the attorney that represented our school district, and I'll call him Attorney Dan. Attorney Dan asked if I wanted to look further into my complaint. Submitted by the teachers union.
Yes, I do. Yeah.
Okay. I did. What had happened with Robert Randall just wasn't right, and it couldn't happen to more teachers. His misbehavior could not continue. It was bad. You know, in a classroom setting, we wouldn't allow children to behave like that, or teachers. So the three women and I were all included on one complaint. Attorney Dan then informed me that the three women from my building all decided that they would withdraw their complaint, leaving just me on my own, just me on the complaint. So it would look like, unfortunately, it was just me, and this principal hadn't done anything to anyone else. Immediately, I inquired why. Why did they leave me on my own here? They had various reasons. But mainly, they just wanted it all to go away and pretend it never happened. I did too, but I knew that behavior would continue if something wasn't done. I felt very let down, to be honest with you, and I felt used as well, but I had to complete this task. My intent was to help the women teachers, as well as myself. So from then on, it was only me. The women who had asked me for help never stood with me. Now, just before school began, Jerry Middleton, the union president, called me over to school, because school hadn't started yet, for a meeting.
Can you meet today, Paul?
I only agreed because Jerry told me, this you do not want to miss.
Okay, Jerry.
When I arrived at the school building, Mrs. Corelli, the secretary, was surprised when I showed up.
Oh, hello.
And she told me that...
Goodness, everyone's been assembled in Bob's office. They've been here for 2 hours already.
Prior to me getting there. Well, I wasn't late, so something was happening.
What's going on?
I didn't know what to expect. I entered Principal Robert Randall's office. It was packed. It wasn't a big office anyway, but it was packed with people. I was introduced to the district superintendent, who I had not met in person at that time yet. The assistant superintendent of the school district. Jerry was there, our union president, and the union vice president. The school district attorney Dan was there, and Principal Robert Randall. And then there were two people taking notes. The room was hot, as if they'd been in there for quite a lengthy time. Bob looked like a kicked dog. Apparently, things had gone on behind the scenes all summer long, of which I had no knowledge. The upper administration had been digging deeper into Robert Randall's past. The superintendent of schools told me,
Paul, thank you for coming in today. Bob has something he wants to tell you. Bob? Paul, Mr. Hart must have, Mr. Hart must have misunderstood me when we met last May. I didn't say I had letters of complaint. I said I had many letters of compliments about him in his teaching program.
Everyone in the room, everyone attending, from the district superintendent to the assistant superintendent to the union leaders, vice and vice president, the attorney Dan for the school district, Principal Robert Randall, the people taking notes, everyone turned in that small room and they looked at me. I thought for a second, inside my head I thought, another lie. I could feel anger building. What? What are you are lying? Do you or any of you think I would have spent a second of my life going through any of this if Bob Randall had not instigated this? I don't want this in my life. And now you're telling me It was me that didn't understand this, but it was him? What about the three other women he accosted in the building? His anger,
his physical aggression,
his threats,
his lies,
his non-communication, his ability to
chaos.
Not explain this to me.
Deception.
Look, I want my hiatus back.
Damage.
I didn't earn Bob's threats. I didn't earn Bob's complaints, but I did lose my life this summer. My time with my family.
And I could never get that back.
After a beat, Attorney Dan told me that if it would be quite expensive to litigate this complaint, and he asked me if it would be agreeable to probably and possibly agree and sign off that they would monitor Principal Robert Randall and make sure he behaved properly in the future. Bob sat there looking like a 5-year-old boy. He was holding a stack of letters he said were compliments from parents about me. Let's see them, Bob. Bob dropped them to the floor in front of the whole room. It was more fakery. I asked for 24 hours to consult my personal attorney, of which I didn't have one at the time, but I did need time to think. On the way out of the office, I recall our school district superintendent, the man in charge of everything, whispering to me,
If Bob Randall ever speaks up in an inappropriate tone, he threatens you, he tries to intimidate you, produce a falsehood or tells an untruth, I want you to call me directly at my office. Here's my card. You'll get straight through to me. I want you to know something, Paul. The principal are in charge of the teachers, but I am in charge of the principals, and that's what I intend to do. He needs to be watched.
The superintendent kept it simple. He also shared with me that he had connected with the school district downstate where Robert Randall had worked prior to being hired in our school district. The superintendent now had a better idea of Bob Randall and his unforgivable behaviors. Now, I had the feeling that I wasn't alone in this anymore. More people knew about it. More people understood. I wasn't losing my sanity. After all, I had a team of people that were behind me and helping me. And not just me, but our entire school. A day later, I withdrew the complaint. Principal Robert Randall kept his job for the time being. A couple weeks later, I returned to school to begin setting up for the school year. I felt that it was important to reset with Principal Robert Randall, so I made it a point to go to the office to see him. I thought I could become positive and make this all work again.
Come in. Hey, Bob. Look, you know, the way I see all this is that you and I are going to have a fresh start. We're going to start over fresh. Is that okay with you?
I extended my hand and I figured work was hard enough without this type of fakery for control. I didn't say that, but I knew it. Bob's face changed to one of seriousness and determination as he shook my hand. And then he looked me straight in the eye and he said,
"Nobody calls Bob Randall a liar. Nobody."
Bob Randall, I thought. Huh. Anyway, I stopped and I shared with Mr. Robert Randall what the superintendent had done, that he had given me his personal hotline. If Bob ever acted out again, I was supposed to phone the superintendent. So I said to him,
"Bob, come on, you don't want to start this over all again, do you? Let's just do our jobs and do our best."
Bob said,
"Watch yourself. I'm coming for you."
I was speechless. It was as if he had learned nothing. I had a blank brain. Within that next week, actually it was just days, I thought that I had to do something to save myself. and get myself out of this situation. Even with people helping, Principal Randall was going to be the way he was. He was not going to change. And I didn't want it to turn into, oh, I'm telling on him and I'm going to do this and that. So his behavior apparently didn't change. I transferred to another school, which would turn out to be an absolute blessing for me. It was a wonderful change with wonderful results. Trying to control his own initiated damage to me, Bob's lie continued to spread. It was like being haunted by a dream and occasionally closing doors for me professionally, and at other times eliminating career options, and it kept many professionals at a safe distance from me. Principal Robert Randall had not committed a victimless crime. It was ongoing. And as time passed, I realized that I should have litigated the complaint. So what happened? Principal Robert Randall was afraid. Afraid of those that worked under him that might be his betters. I didn't feel I was his betters, but these were all his decisions. Better organized, better communicator, better speakers, better letter writers, better at being natural leaders. Bob had gone way out of his way to get us fired or voluntarily transferred or out of our little school. Now, the 3 and 4 other women stayed at that school.
You teachers are getting on my last nerve.
I don't want to see you.
Get out of here.
You just get.
And eventually, they had to learn how to deal with him, his anger, his aggression. If he didn't get his way, he was going to respond in an uncontrollable manner. But as for me, Bob did not like that he had been found out and never really faced it. Remember, he had always felt he was the smartest person in the room. I can only imagine that Bob battled within himself continually, probably. And on occasion, Bob would pop up to subtly haunt me in my time in education. All of a sudden, he would be at a conference or a meeting. He'd just sit there and glare at me for the next 20 years. Mistruths and lies can leave you speechless. And I have to say that other people I worked with for years after that sometimes would come up to me and say, you know, I heard you were kind of bad news from this guy, this principal at another school, but you're nothing like that. It did hinder my career at times, but mostly by that point, my work spoke for itself. Bob Randall retired quietly and disappeared, never coming to terms with the false reality and mistruths that he had created. After all, he was too smart for that. So power doesn't truly corrupt. Sometimes it does. But it does expose leaders for who they truly are. It can. Lesson learned. And in some cases, it's left me speechless. For life's learning curve, I'm so glad to be in a happy place. I'm Paul Hart. Subscribe to Life's Learning Curve at lifeslearningcurve.org and leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or Podchaser. Life's Learning Curve podcast is put together by producer Paul Hart, with assistance by Michael Saldivar and Sebastian T. Dog. We're mixed by Mary Clark, technical director Heidi Cerner. As always, music and audio assistance by Riley Hart. Visit our website, subscribe to our website, lifeslearningcurve.org. Today's story is not my story. It's one retold to me by a friend I met out west. This actually happened to him. I retell this as if it happened to me. Characters have been combined and events have been condensed. These are his memories. He was the teller of his own story. This episode has imaginative recreations. To protect the privacy of others, names have been changed and characters conflated. I'm Paul Hart, and we will be back soon with more Life's Learning Curve.